Ron Paul would always talk about the gold standard at the time. And don't get me wrong, I think a gold standard would be much, much better than what we have right now. The problem is that historically, what do nations do when they're on a gold standard and they need to fight a war?
They just suspend
the gold standard. You know? So the difference is that what Bitcoin brings is this decentralization, where if you were truly on a Bitcoin standard, someone in Washington, D.C. couldn't just say, we're going off the Bitcoin standard now. That's the power that Bitcoin has, that you can actually have a chance at separating money in the state. And that is the most important thing in the world to do.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. I've actually not finished the other episode that I had intended to do today. So we are actually, and this is something that I mentioned in yesterday's or in the previous episode, is the panel that I had at Bitcoin 2024. And if you haven't listened to this, I really just think it was a fantastic discussion. It was an awesome panel. We had Dave Smith, Mark Moss, and Luke Groman, and the topic was government out of control. I've gotten a lot of feedback. A lot of people have kind of clipped it and then sent me things and just being like, you know, this was fantastic. I really loved it. Dave Smith had a couple of his iconic, just really fantastic rants against the government. Just an easy panel, easy topic, and something that was super fun to do. And we got into just how, in all the different ways, that we have lost touch, or that government has lost touch for its reason for existence. Granted, if you listen to this show and you know me, you know that I'm far more aligned with the whole idea that the reason for its existence is actually a facade, because what an institution is good at, or what the result of that institution is its purpose, not what it says it does. And its results and what that institution does are very clear. So the facade of, oh, we serve the people and we work for you and by the people for the people, that's true right up until the fact that government doesn't operate like that, even in the slightest. And this is really easy to test, like go up to a police officer and demand that they do something. Like, I don't think that's going to work out very well. I don't think, like, I'm your boss, you're fired. That's not going to work out how you think it's going to work out. The government is the perfect example of says one thing because it sounds really good and does the opposite. It works exactly the polar opposite of what we believe or what we are taught in, ironically, or obviously, and not coincidentally, because it's by design. In our government schools, we are taught that the government serves us. And there was just a lot of really great stuff to unpack with this. Obviously, the people on the panel are fantastic resources on so many of these different concepts. But also just, and I wish we had had the time to get into this because we've talked a little bit about it on the show, but I do want to dig into it more in probably a later episode about the Chevron decision and essentially what we've seen happen over the last 30 to 40 years, really kind of 50 years, kind of 1970s on. Who'd have thunk? Something happened in 1970. I wonder what that was. But that the bureaucracies have just become these kind of like fiefdoms, these little pseudo self, quote unquote, restricting, self-regulating bureaucracies that interpret their own levels of power, and that we've actually shockingly had a huge win in regards to that category of problem just in the last few weeks and months. And basically the Supreme Court has done more to begin to rein in and open up for defensive lawsuits against the government and against the bureaucratic state. But this is not something that we really got an opportunity to dig into in the panel, so it's something that I want to cover a little bit more on the show. So stay tuned, stay subscribed so that you don't miss this, because this will absolutely be part of the discussion going forward. And in fact, we might actually have a friend of mine on to discuss this because I think this would be a really, really fun episode to dig into. A quick thank you to Swan Bitcoin for supporting this show and for being an awesome place to buy Bitcoin. I've been doing a DCA there for a very, very long time. And then I auto withdraw to my cold card, to my hardware wallet, so that I know that I hold my keys. And there is no one better. There is no one longer running and more trusted in the space than CoinKite to create something that is open, secure, and that you can use easily. I use it with my Nunchuck wallet. If you're getting a hardware wallet, if you're buying Bitcoin, buy it on Swan and then auto withdraw it to your hardware wallet. You're not going to get any shitcoins, and you know that you own your keys and that you are secure. You can sleep soundly at night. It's just a fantastic way to solve 90% of the problems that people have in Bitcoin. Those two things will save you so much headache. Go do them now. Links, details, and a discount code are right in the show notes. But for now, let's go straight into our panel, again with Dave Smith, Luke Groman, and Mark Moss on Government Out of Control.
What's up, guys? Oh, come on! We're doing a little bit? So this is Government Out of Control. This is like the easiest panel I've ever had. We have got a hell of a lineup right here. So Mark Moss, host of the Mark Moss Show, like huge name in like navigating people through the Bitcoin industry, through this ecosystem, through macroeconomics, like some amazing writing on kind of our trend toward communism. We got Luke Groman, a global analyst, researcher, just incredible at kind of connecting the dots. I've listened to a lot of your stuff. I've always been a big fan of your perspective on things. So awesome. Welcome, Dave Smith.
Who are you?
You do stuff. You have a show or something.
All true.
All true. Dave Smith, hilarious and absolutely the most consistent mother effer that you know on libertarian principles. And if there is anybody to talk about how the government is out of control, it's that guy right there. I'm Guy Swan, the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. Welcome to our panel. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining me. I'm really stoked about this. I wanted to start this off, actually, really easily, because I kind of feel like you guys all have your own little specialty. When I say the government is out of control, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
Personally, I think they're doing a great job. So have you guys heard of this kid, Joe Biden? I think he's the future. They're saying he's out right now, but he's going to get back in. Well, that's
really vibrant, sharp as a tack.
Yeah, sharp as a tack. Well, behind closed doors, he is sharp as a tack.
Yes.
What you guys see is not the real Joe Biden. I've met with him privately. He's on it.
He has a bad day from time to time.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways in which the government's out of control. Obviously, pretty much all ways that you would think of government, they're out of control right now. But I will say that I think, like, there was kind of around, when was the Tea Party really big? Like around 2010, 2011, there was kind of like interest in the fact that like spending and debt was out of control. And I feel like that's kind of gone away. People are more concerned with like culture wars. They're more concerned with foreign wars. They're more concerned with a lot of stuff that you should be concerned, assassination attempts and crazy things that are going on. But man, I was just reading the other day about like how the interest on the debt and how much that's consuming of the total federal budget is just, it's like right in front of you. And you're like, oh, we're going off of a cliff. This is all, like, it's just a matter of time. And time, I'm not talking 20 or 30 years. I'm saying like in the next few years, this whole game of musical chairs is up. And I think that for you Bitcoin people, I mean, I know you guys have had like a crazy run, but the potential for what you guys have over these next few years is going to be, like, the sky is the limit. So that's the cool thing that is cool about this whole conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Luke?
I'm going to be a lot drier than you, Dave. That's easy for me to do. No, I think you touched on the interest point, and that's exactly, I think, a key crux of the issue. Something I track is the percentage of U.S. tax receipts that are spent on entitlements, interest, and defense. And in 2016, I was looking at it, and it was about 60-65% of tax receipts. And I said, okay, well, when these three numbers get to 100%, you know, stuff will start to get real. We might start to have a problem. And I kind of ran out based on sort of just straight lining the run rates of each respective line item. And I said, okay, maybe 2020 is when we'll get to that. We got to it in the third quarter of 18. And then 2020 hit, and we sort of went into, like, silly season. And so those three numbers are now, in just a little over 8 years, they're about 120% of tax receipts. So literally, if we, you hear all the time, we just need to cut spending. We're spending 120% of tax receipts on just three line items: entitlements, uncuttable, defense, third rail, and interest, which in theory is up. is up in a low small part because we're trying to fight inflation. So we're actually making the problem worse by fighting inflation because the debt is already so high. So I think your summary is exactly right. That's what I think of as just the pace at which these big three line items have gone from 60% to 120%. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, if you guys, I know Trump's coming here in a little bit, and listen, I'm sure there's Trump supporters here. First off, I will say it's so great that he's coming here to talk to you guys. Like, give him credit for that. He's coming here and trying to earn your vote. I respect that. But man, like, does he need to hear from you guys? Because I don't even think he gets it, but just the other day at his speech where he was like, interest rates are so high, when I'm in there, they'll be low again. You know, and you're like, ah,
really low, really low.
That's really not the answer either, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's remarkable how bad and quickly this can steamroll. Like, I feel like, you know, it seemed to be like a social insanity. Like, that there was actually outrage about like a $700 billion spending bill and the bailouts in 2007, 2008, 2009 era. Like, that was a huge deal and it caused enormous outrage. And now we just like kind of casually talk about $3 trillion, $6 trillion in a year. And we can't even, I read a piece on the show.
We need to get that Obama fiscal sanity back.
Like, how ridiculous is that? Like, but it's true. We would actually have some degree of fiscal sanity if we went back to what insanity used to mean.
Yeah.
And, I read a piece that was just talking about, just a masterclass and a Ponzi scheme that we're actually dealing with from a financial standpoint, because not only can we not afford our debt, but we are rolling over debt with new debt and issuing new debt on top of it to pay for the interest on the old debt that we're rolling over, and the only people who are buying it is our own central bank. Like, how could you...
This is the Mr. Brownstone economic.
Like, what?
I used to do a little, but the little went into it, so the little got more and more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, listen, and think about, if we're all going to be honest, it's, look, the government loots all of you people, and then they propagandize your children to worship them for doing it. It's pretty impressive, really, if you think about it.
Excellent work.
And then think about the result of all of that. So speaking of out of control, right, out of control spending, you mentioned culturally, but... it's the growth and the trajectory of the size of the government.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why the spending and the fiscal spending is so out of control. Right. So if you think about that just in size of sheer numbers, if you go back to 1970, before we got off the gold standard, the U.S. government was spending about $4,500 per person. Today, the U.S. government is spending about $19,500 per person. So the size of the government is expanded at a rapid rate. And, you know, in the book Anatomy of the State, Rothbard talks about the state is somebody. Yeah, if you guys haven't read that book, anybody read that book, Anatomy of the State? It's like a booklet you can read in like an hour. You totally should.
There's audio on Bitcoin Audible. You can listen to it.
Yeah, check out Guy reads it. You should listen to it on the way home. But he talks about how the purpose of the state is to not end, and more importantly, to always continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And so now it's not that it's just out of control spending defense spending, interest spending, but now they have to get involved into every cultural part of our lives, micromanage every minutia detail of how we talk, hate speech or whatever it is. So the growth of the government is out of control.
Yeah.
And it's always, you know, the culture war stuff is just always easier for people to deal in.
Because it's easy to
digest. You don't have to really know anything in order to get into a fight about, like, transgender bathrooms or something like that. And so everybody always gravitates to that. Like, if you were to look on Twitter or something like that, you would think the big battle of our time is between, like, leftists who believe gender is a social construct and, like, trad cons who think women's place is in the kitchen. Yeah. When both of those views combined represent 1% of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. I don't even know the cultural views of all four people on the panel, but I guarantee neither of us fit into either of those boxes.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? And then, like, this stuff, dealing with, like, the fiscal implications of where we are or the monetary policy, that's really hard. You got to read books and you have to really think about it, you know? But for, like, people here kind of live in that world, and it really is so important that these issues get pushed into the forefront, because this is what actually matters. This is why empires collapse, you know? Yeah. And so...
And it's working. I mean, just, you know, Ron Paul really, I think, brought the end the Fed to the forefront just, what, in 2009?
Yeah,
give it up for Ron Paul. And, you know...
There is so much love for that guy. It's been like, what, 20 years?
And Luke could probably answer this better than me, but I just don't remember the word fiat or inflation being used in everyday normal lives. Like, normal people didn't talk about these types of things. And to Dave's point, we're pushing it into the forefront. And now it's normal language, and people are starting to understand the mechanisms. And now we can finally kind of push back on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The most important thing that you can do in order to secure your Bitcoin and know that you own it is to take it off the exchange to withdraw it and use a reliable, secure hardware wallet. This is the Cold Card hardware wallet made by CoinKite. This device can be entirely air-gapped from start to finish. CoinKite has designed everything about this device to be as secure as possible, even in those edge case scenarios. And there's so many additional features like the Brick Me pin, the Dummy pin, and even all the features you need for complex multi-sig and to use multiple wallets and devices together. But if you don't want any of that complication or any of those advanced features, you don't need to use any of it. And you can just use the Cold Card to keep your keys safe and know that your Bitcoin is secure. And the thing I love most about this is that I can enable NFC and I can just tap to pay. I set up my transaction and my wallet on this phone, and then whenever I want to send anything, all I have to do is tap, send the transaction to my Cold Card, I sign it, and then I tap, send it back, and broadcast. That's it. I'm able to get hardware wallet security for my phone. If you haven't gotten a Cold Card yet or checked out the Cold Card Q, their new device with a larger screen that can communicate by QR code and has an entire QWERTY keyboard on it, you definitely need to. The details will all be right in the show notes, as well as my discount code, Bitcoin Audible. Protect your keys and get yourself a Cold Card.
Now, I wanted to, especially in social and Twitter and Noster and like all these things, like, I feel like there's a huge mixed bag about how people feel about this conference. And like the fact that, you know, Bitcoin's purpose is the separation of money and state, right? This is about reining them in. And then Trump's on in 2 hours. You know, we got presidential candidates, we got campaign promises, we got politicians galore. Like, and a lot of people are like, is this captured? Is Bitcoin a super PAC now? You know, like, and I'm curious, what do you make of this? Because I've heard a lot of different perspectives, and I'm curious kind of how you see where we are in this transition, and how do you make of kind of the insanity that has really just arisen in this environment in the last like 3 to 4 months?
I think the fact that two of the three major political or presidential candidates are here is, I think it reflects the growing political power, to your point about it being a super PAC. But I don't know that that's the only reason. I think there is a growing recognition in the halls of power in Washington that recognize the mathematical realities that we just discussed in the first 10 minutes. And I think they are starting to recognize the possible utility of Bitcoin as a least worst way of managing through what is looking increasingly like it's going to be a difficult, bumpy ride for the next 4 to 6 years. And so I think that's a bigger part of it. I'm sure there's, you know, just sort of the base political, hey, Bitcoiners have a lot of money at 70,000 a coin, and you know, I want to tap that for my campaign. But I do think there is a much greater recognition than most people realize at high levels in Washington that we have a problem, and we don't have a problem in 5 years or 10 years or maybe not even in 2 years. We have a problem very soon.
Now, yeah. Yeah.
I think in regards to separation of money and state, which that's something I'm very passionate about. I know, Guy, you know, we've talked about this extensively. And when I think about that, I think about removing the money from the hands of the state. Now, why do we have politics here at this event is kind of the question that Guy is posing. And I would say when I think about separation of money and state, it's more about the state being able to create money at will. Yeah. We want to take away the ink from the money printer and prevent them and put and force some fiscal responsibility back, right? Prevent that creep of the government because they can always print money for never-ending wars and more cultural programs. However, that doesn't mean we need to abstain from politics. If anything, we, as Bitcoiners who value freedom above everything, should be taking the power back of the political system. So it's not about trying to abstain and go live on a hill, on a rock. And, you know, we say that Bitcoin will fix everything. So, but no. You can't just go take your Bitcoin, hide on a hill, and then Bitcoin magically fixes it. We have to do the work. And so we have to be involved in politics. I think we should unite as a super PAC. I think we should be involved in politics. But take the printing ability away from the government. That's the separation I'm here for.
100%. Yeah. So that essentially is the only reason why I love Bitcoin. Like, I know there's different reasons why other people like it, and a lot of people have gotten rich off it, and I'm a capitalist. I'm not against getting rich. Good for you guys. If any of you guys have gotten really rich off it, give me money. But I don't like the slogan Bitcoin fixes everything. I've tried to use it on my wife when she's mad at me, and it doesn't work. So,
like, well, there if you made the money from it, you gave her some, maybe.
But she's like, you didn't check in, and you were out all night. And I'm like, Bitcoin fixes this.
It's okay.
Like, it's okay. But the whole game to me, right? Like, why I love Bitcoin and why I think it's so, like, the potential is so limitless, is because, like, the more you learn about money and government control of money, you realize that that is the whole game. Everything else flows from that. Every evil thing that government does is only because they control the money supply. Like, take an evil thing that government does, and I'll explain how it's because they control the money supply, you know? Like, I mean, just think about, like, okay, we fought, like, a catastrophic 20-year war in Afghanistan that literally killed hundreds of thousands of people, cost trillions of dollars, and thousands of our bravest young boys died, and then tens of thousands committed suicide in the wake of the war, right? Well, just, like, imagine if they couldn't print the money for that war. Right. Imagine if they had to tax the American people every month for the war in Afghanistan. You think that thing would have lasted 20 years?
No way.
You'd have been lucky to get it through a year before the people would have demanded a result. Like, what are you doing here? I mean, just imagine trying to do the lockdowns of 2020 if they couldn't just print trillions of dollars and pass them out. That people wouldn't have taken it. They would have been like, no, we're going back to work. We're not doing this. It's only because they control the money that they can get away with tyranny. Listen, like, personally, I came up as a child of the Ron Paul presidential campaigns. Like, that's how I got interested in all of this stuff. And Ron Paul would always talk about the gold standard at the time. And don't get me wrong, I think a gold standard would be much, much better than what we have right now. The problem is that historically, what do nations do when they're on a gold standard and they need to fight a war?
They just suspend the gold standard,
you know? So the difference is that what Bitcoin brings is this decentralization, where if you were truly on a Bitcoin standard, someone in Washington, D.C. couldn't just say, we're going off the Bitcoin standard now. That's the power that Bitcoin has, that you can actually have a chance at separating money in the state. And that is the most important thing in the world to do.
I do want to just add, you know.
1,000%.
Yeah, go ahead, give him the applause. I do want to add, Dave, the irony of what Dave said, because he started by saying he doesn't like that Bitcoin fixes everything, but then he went on to describe all the ways Bitcoin fixes everything.
It doesn't fix everything, just war and tyranny.
Yeah.
And that's pretty big.
This used to be known, right? Like, you can go back to 1948, you can find it online. Warren Buffett's father, Congressman Howard Buffett, wrote a missive, gold convertible money is essential to human freedom. That was the title of the, you know, human freedom depends on gold convertible currency. And, you know, to your point, the gold convertibility is a point of risk that has been removed by Bitcoin, as you said. So it is, it literally is the whole game. All the other stuff is just noise to distract from control of the printer.
Again, though, if you go out all night and don't call your wife, Bitcoin is not going to help you with that. So I'm just saying. Take that.
It's her Bitcoin, then.
But the wild thing about it is that, like, when you look at exactly why it is that money is at the source of everything, is because that, like, all power is about the control of resources. All power is about the control of energy, about our energy, what we actually exert toward. And if we are working for something that someone can print for free, then we are literally working for them. Like, not by choice. We are being coerced into always provide our energy for them for nothing in return, explicitly. And the kind of the crazy thing in kind of what you were saying in like breaking down what the cost, the true cost of all of this is just in totality. Like in the, when we're talking about like a systemic fraud in like a counterfeit situation, is that the problem is the, it is a systemic problem. You know, some people will talk to me about how like, oh, we got to deal with fractional reserve in like a bank or in an exchange, or the ETF might have some IOUs. At the end of the day, we know what happens with fractional reserve on top of the Bitcoin standard. It's Mt. Gox. It's FTX. They go out of business. They die. They do not survive at length. Fractional reserve doesn't work if you have a sound money to escape to at the end of the day. And what's happened is that the government has set up a system where they don't have to adhere to that reality.
No consequence.
There's no consequence. There's no systemic pushback that says at the very lowest level, they have a total and perfect fraud over everything that they lie about, all of their irresponsibility and all of their corruption. They can always just paper over it.
They did. They did until Bitcoin.
And yep. Until Bitcoin. And I think that's, like you said, that is the problem that Bitcoin is solving.
This is the Swan Bitcoin app, and this is how easy it is to just buy Bitcoin whenever you're feeling like it. And I feel like it right now. And as it shows me right here, I still have $9,388 worth of my $10,000 of Bitcoin buying that has no fees whatsoever. And now I have $10 more worth of Bitcoin. I do this quite often. One of the really great things about Swan is the incredible number of resources they have for learning and understanding anything that you want to know about Bitcoin. And importantly, they're going to teach you why you should not trade. They're not going to encourage you to trade. They are Bitcoin only. If you're looking for an easy and reliable way to get into Bitcoin, if you're looking to put Bitcoin in your IRA, if you're looking to put Bitcoin in your business, if you're looking to do anything around getting on a Bitcoin standard or getting exposed to Bitcoin in your portfolio, check out swanbitcoin.com/guy is my special link, and you will find it very conveniently right in the show notes.
By the way, just in case you guys don't, so Guy is he orange-pilled me, and he was the one, he came on my podcast, and like I was loosely familiar with Bitcoin. I knew a lot of people were into it, but it was part of your, like, you went on this rant. That was one of the most powerful things I ever heard about how, like, when your money is fake, your entire world is fake. And that there's so much, like, when you really think about it, money is almost 50% of every transaction. I mean, I guess there's sometimes
virtual.
You trade things for
yeah.
But for the overwhelming majority of the time, every economic interaction that you have is trading something for money. And it's like that money itself is a lie.
Yeah.
Like almost every single day you go out and you trade a lie for a freaking vape that I have to go buy after this because they wouldn't let me bring it in to the building.
Thanks, TSA.
I'm going to go trade a lie for nicotine. Something so real as nicotine. I have to trade a lie for that. And there's a profound way in which that corrodes like the national soul. when everything you're doing is based off of a scam?
Well, because we believe that money is a neutral. It's like a tool. So right. Money could be used for good or money could be used for bad. It's how I use it, but not necessarily. Because the money system that we have today, that would be true for a sound money. But on a fiat money system, it's built on theft, inflation being theft. It's built on lies and deceit. So then anything built on that system is inherently evil, unfortunately, and it creates all types of perverse outcomes. Luke and I were talking about earlier how the financial system has distorted the entire workforce to where now essential things we need, like welding bridges and building planes that don't fall out of the sky, are deprioritized so we can go work in derivatives trading that does absolutely nothing and provides no value to the world. And so this lies, theft, and deceit has perverted the entire system that we have.
The bloating of the financial system is the worst because all of the new money gets funneled through in a bond, in a loan, and it basically allows them to just consume. And then what are they going to do? They're just going to lend it to giant corporations. And everybody's like, I hate big corporations. It's like big corporations are massive because they have access to money that the rest of us don't have. They get a price that's just not real, and everything just funnels up to them. And you think about, like go back like 30 or 40 years, the size of the financial sector as a portion of the economy has grown. Like, that it's a way to, there's nothing about finance is inherently valuable in itself. It's managing real resources. That means that it takes us twice as much of our time and energy to do the same job as we used to
do. Well, it's a parasitic industry, right?
And how many people get pulled into that industry, right? Like, look, if you're a doctor, your average doctor's salary, they make like a couple hundred grand or something like that.
Specialists about 300 now.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just say 300 grand or something like that, which is like not a bad salary to be making, but it's not, you know, with today's prices, it's not like you're rich if you're making 300 grand a year. You know, you'll bang out your mortgage payment, you'll send your kid to a private school, maybe you take a vacation and you're out of money at the end of the year, you know, like that's basically, yet you could go become a multimillionaire on Wall Street. So now, all of these, like, all the young talent we're pulling in to this, like, phony industry that does nothing to create real wealth for people, whereas, like, all of, like, and nothing against anyone in anyone in finance, I understand.
We hate you all.
No, listen, make your money. You know what I mean? Like, you got to make your money. I mean, you're a part of something evil, but make your money in that evil thing. You're destroying the greatest nation ever built. But
no, make your money.
It's not you. But how much talent is there on Wall Street that if it wasn't for this being such a big part of the economy, they'd be out there actually being productive and improving everybody's life? It's tragic what they've done to us.
I was telling Mark before, right? I know of a situation where there was a medical professional who trained for 16 or 18 years to operate on one of the most sensitive part of the human body. It's probably one of a few thousand people do it globally. And they left that to become a hedge fund analyst in healthcare because they could make more money without the legal risk.
And I was joking before. I don't begrudge that guy. He's trying to give his family the best life he can.
It makes sense. He is simply reacting to the perverted incentives of the system.
Yeah.
And
I mean, is he supposed to give that up when that's good for him? Like, that's the whole thing,
100%.
Right?
It's personal choice.
The incentives of the system guide us in the wrong direction to do what's best for us, which becomes at odds with the rest of society, because the price signal for what everyone actually values is bullshit.
So let's flip this for a second, guy, because we're running down on time
here. Yeah, we are running out of time.
And this sounds really bad and really scary, but talking about broken incentives, imagine the difference. Imagine the shift in the world when we fix the incentive system and we have the best doctors in the world, the most highly trained, like Luke just said, and rather than going into trading derivatives at a hedge fund, focus on life-changing, life-saving technologies, life-saving medicines or surgeries or whatever it is, and then how much more value can be put forward into the world. So we're really on the precipice of a massive shift. You know, we call it like a Renaissance 2.0, if you will. A sound money system with an information boom, changing the incentive structure, and we have massive growth and massive hope ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's such a good point. That it's like you also recognize, I mean, there's so much beauty around us. It's so amazing to be alive today. Like, my son had a congenital heart defect that if I had lived at any time except for the last 20 years, I would have lost my son. and he's fine. He's going to live a totally normal life now because the things they can do today are incredible. We have all this amazing stuff around us. If we just fixed the money, we could live in an unprecedented boom time.
Just do more of that.
You can't even imagine. It would be considered magic 100 years ago to have what we have now. Yeah. And we've got the answer. And it's cool to have a group of people who all know what it is coming together, you know?
Hell yeah. Well, maybe since we really short on time, maybe just close this out with, you know, 2020 was, it felt like a turning point. Both for the government kind of just going unrestricted, like you're going to do what we say, and when someone brings up your rights, it's not even something we pander to anymore, it's something we laugh at, and we accuse you of being selfish because you're not doing what the state wants you to. So we have moved aggressively in the wrong direction in kind of one realm. But at the same time, many millions of people woke up. And they were like, what in the hell is happening here? And we've kind of got these two paths. And maybe my question is simply, are we going down both of these paths at the same time? Is one winning? Or are we just separating into two worlds? Like maybe give me a little bit of hope or a little bit of realism for where you think we are in this.
Listen, I'll just say this. I'll be quick, and then you guys can finish. But I'd say this, right? And I've been a very sharp critic of Donald Trump for years, and many of his policies that I didn't agree with, both domestic and foreign policy. The fact that Donald Trump is the candidate who the entire corporate media is telling you're not allowed to support that guy. The CIA and the big banks and big pharma and all the power centers are saying you're not allowed to support that guy. And that he is winning so dominantly right now is such a great sign for this country. Yeah. If nothing else, just that people are like, screw you, we're not listening to you. I love that.
Yeah, I think that was somebody made a comment that I thought was great, was like, appreciate someone if they have the right enemies.
I've said many times, if the media wanted Trump out of the race, they should just endorse him.
That's great.
But you know, in terms of the two paths,
that would probably work.
I think we're running two parallel paths. I've been calling it on podcasts with Mark, and as it we're riding two horses with one ass, and it's ultimately. You can only ride one horse with one ass. And the horses are increasingly bolting in two different directions. And I think this is true of the fiscal side and the economic side, which is where I've mainly used the terms. But I think it's true socially, et cetera. And so I think we can ride these two horses with one ass for a bit longer, but a decision point is coming. And I think what we decide is in part the actions everybody takes individually in terms of how you vote with your wallet with a Bitcoin, who you vote for, how you act locally, how you raise your children. I mean, it's not one thing. I mean, the biggest thing people can do is raise your children well. That's the biggest, you know, raise your children well, the problem will fix itself. So I'm optimistic, but I'm cautiously optimistic
I would add, Guy said it perfectly, and I agree with, like, the tide, as I always say, the pendulum is starting to swing back. And he said that a lot of people woke up. 2020 was a big wake-up call for a lot of people. But really what the state wants, if you look at the Bolshevik Revolution or you look at Mao's Great Leap Forward, the state wants to censor you. They want to keep you quiet, and they want everyone to conform in a perfect box. And the reason why is because if one person can break out of that, if they can break through into living truth as opposed to living a lie, everyone else can see that, and they want that as well. And we've been sort of in this censored bubble, if you will, and Elon Musk has been standing against the world in the front of that and has shifted the window just a little bit. It's not open censorship. I mean, there's still censorship, but just a little bit has started to change it. Now we have Mark Zuckerberg who's like, oh, wait a minute. I guess I could stand up a little bit to this. And as Luke said, it's about our kids, but it's about each one of us. And so I like to say that your silence makes you complicit. And so you don't have to stand up and be vocal, but you could at least cast doubt. Oh, I'm not sure if I agree with that. But it's about us all waking up one by one. It's us all standing up to the face of that, at least casting doubt, if not opposing it directly. Yeah. And we'll shift that tide back.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Well, guys, Without a doubt, the government is out of control. I think we recognize this. We see it in a million different ways. But I tell you what, every time I go to a Bitcoin conference and I come hang out with people, I feel like it gets more and more wild just every single time. And it's absolutely crazy that I was just chatting with my brother while we were walking over here, that we found Bitcoin in 2011. And we were sitting in our trailer, poor nobodies, like just talking about this thing, and we described this day. We described the fact that like eventually it was going to be here, and it's just so unreal to actually see it. And everybody that I talk to is absolutely as busy as they can be. Everybody's got 10 projects. Everybody's trying to build everything under the sun. And I swear to God, if the government can be reined in, like, it's gonna happen with this group of people. Like, if it can happen, why not us? Why not us? So, I just wanna say thank you guys. Dave, it's so awesome to actually finally meet you in person, brother.
Yes, it's great to meet you in person.
Luke, Mark, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, everybody.